Pod! Yeah, baby. I'm feeling it this week. Let's go. Bonus pod time. What inspired the bonus pod? You terrific listeners. So, look, had a couple great emails come in. We're going to go with my man, Devin Kimball. He sent this incredible email that I think you guys will be really interested in going over and having the opportunity to kind of think about some of the things that Devin was thinking about. And I think he's spot on. So I wanted to take a second to share a lot of the things that he had. And then also had another listener, Adam Karen. He got in touch on Twitter and wanted to just bring up a couple other games that he had thought of during the Bronco era that were decided kind of on the last play. And just to talk about that, because he made me go on a deep dive. So, very cool. Reach out to me if you are excited or have something that you want to say or think about. I love it. So, CougarCast@gmail.com or on Twitter @CougarCast. My name is Keith Schertz. This is this week's bonus podcast episode. Sometimes we'll do this. Why not? It's kind of fun. Okay, so here we go. Here's the email from Devin Kimball. He says, "What's up, Keith? It's no secret that Kalani's teams are completely underwhelming in home games, but also seem to perform admirably, or maybe just adequately, in away games, even in difficult venues. Even though that win against Tennessee maybe should not have happened, it was still a show of some sort of willpower by our Cougs to silence that insanely loud stadium at the death and pull out the win." That's right. Death shall not conquer us today. He says, "I was there. It was loud. However, our focus now shifts to the USC game this week, which I honestly feel like would be much more excited about if it were an away game. So Devin likes the Cougars' opportunity to beat USC more if it's down in the LA Coliseum instead of at Lavelle's house." Interesting. Let's get into some more of the reason why, right? So he says, "I firmly predict a blowout loss, maybe something like 42-10 to the Trojans." What got me thinking about this was watching the Monday press conference where Kalani Sitake and some of the players were asked to share their insights regarding their historically poor performances at home and how they might be able to fix that this week. Their answers and their body language were extremely telling and, quite frankly, terrifying. I mean, if you haven't watched that yet, you probably should. You really should. Go back and try to find some of the press video that they have from Monday. All right. When Kyrus Tonga gets asked the question, he lets out a big sigh and practically sags in his chair before non-committally saying, "I don't know exactly." Brady Christensen say they feel anxious and nervous to play in front of their fans. Those responses shattered me. It totally proved to me that they believe that there's something wrong at home. And heck, if they believe that they've already lost in Lavelle's house again this week and again next week, and that sucks. So, to hit pause on this email, I just want to say, yeah, it is interesting. I went and watched these videos, and when people were getting asked about, like, "Yeah, you guys struggle at home. What's going on? How do we win games at home?" Like, there's just this, yeah, there isn't a swagger to them that they have had on the road. And obviously, you know, I've mentioned it a couple times during this season's podcast, but, you know, to have Michael Shelton, who was one of the senior leaders last year, talk about how they like playing on the road more than home, this is clearly part of the culture of that BYU football team. I think that either the coach, you know, only us, and they try to do rallying cries around that, but what's happened is they've got all this, like, kind of weird feeling about playing in Lavelle Edwards Stadium in front of BYU fans. Which, again, I just punctuate with, that's nuts. They want to be loved so hard by everyone in Cougar Nation. Everybody wants to love this BYU football team. And obviously, it's not, you know, if we were like Abraham Maslow, if we all listened to him, we'd have unconditional positive regard for the Cougars. And we kind of do, meaning that we'll never stop being fans. We'll always love the Cougars and have a place in our heart for them. But, you know, our fervency, how loud we are, how hard we try to show up to football games, that isn't unconditional positive regard. That is conditional, okay? And so it is kind of interesting that when you see Brady Christensen and Kyrus Tonga answer these questions, and they do, you can see it just washes over their body. Their body language is the bigger one. I mean, they said the right things. Basically, they said the right things. I don't know why we haven't won at home. Yeah, you know, you can't give like a specific reason. You don't want to, I mean, you can't blame the crowd. They're not playing the game, right? But the crowd definitely makes an impact. And then, you know, hearing that they have more anxiety and that they're more nervous to play at home and in front of their fans. Yeah, he's right. That does suck. So Devin continues. Before each of their big away games, they prepare all week long for a rowdy atmosphere. They take mental reps on how they will respond to hostility. And before Wisconsin, they played jump around all week long. They did the same thing playing Rocky Top all last week. And when they heard the boos of the crowd and the crowd noise in other stadiums, they had already trained their responses. They would dig in deeper, fight back against the opposition, against all odds. I'm not saying that playing the opposing team's fight song is the one and only reason the teams have been prepared for battle in opposing territory, but I believe strongly in the mental aspect of sports, and that mental preparation has done loads to prepare them for their away games. So, this is again Devin Kimball, great email. So my big idea at the end of this rant is that they need to totally change how they prepare for home games mentally. I'm not kidding when I suggest this. All this week at practice, they should be playing over the loudspeakers their own fight song, accompanied by a solid chorus of boos. Maybe there's some way that the coaches can replicate 50,000 fans sitting in the benches lulled to sleep like they were last year against Northern Illinois. The game that prompted Michael Shelton to comment that he didn't like the home crowd, that he thought the home crowd sucked. Maybe play no music at all, and the team has to play in silence and find their inner will to fight back against the hostility of complete apathy. That's a great line, right? I mean, apathy from the crowd, yeah, we're going to come back to that. Because that has gotten to be so much more crippling to fight against apathetic home crowds than against boisterous yet energetic, hostile opposing fans. Again, think about that. They're more comfortable in hostility than they are in apathy. And honestly, that actually kind of makes sense. And our fan base has a fragile self-esteem. So as soon as things go south, our team will have to play in an apathetic environment, ready or not. I just hope they are ready. They have got to be taking mental reps to shut up their own fans as if their own fans are the enemy. Take that energy and fuel the team to bounce back from a stake and stall drives. I can't stand seeing them just sit down at home again. I'm sick of it. Anyway, here's hoping I'm wildly surprised by this week's end result. Go Cougs! Thank you, Devin. Okay, it's an aspect that I didn't cover in the podcast that I released yesterday. Look, I think that this is huge. You know, there isn't a lot of belief. I'm certainly guilty of this. Anyone that's listened to the show, they're like, well, okay. So no criticism towards fans. None at all. I mean, fandom is the ultimate act of surrender. You go, you put your heart into it, you believe in and identify with a certain brand, and you go with it. And then you're at the mercy of what's going to happen on that field, on that basketball court, on the ice, okay? And if you cheer for BYU hockey, usually it goes terrible. The point that I'm going to say is that I think that it's a very, very key thing. You know, they do a lot to simulate and try to do things to put people in a spot where they're feeling what it might be like to play at Neyland Stadium. They are putting people... So the question is how do you replicate... how do you replicate apathy, vitriol, here we go again, right? That entire thing that I talked about when we played the University of Utah. For me, the biggest moment of like, oh my gosh, right? that happened against Utah was after the 3rd and 29, the face mask. Oh, jeez. And honestly, they deserved like some of the here we go again. I think the fans are trying. They're trying to fight through it. They're trying to be extra. They're trying to do what they can to be there and to be present. It actually brings to fact that how important it'll be to not let USC get away. The scariest thing about rooting for BYU right now, especially when they have these offenses that aren't explosive in any way, that give you zero hope that they can rally and make a run at it, you start wondering, you know, if we go down 3 scores, this game's over. But that's not, like, such a huge indictment. Most teams can't come back from 3 scores. But, you know, it feels like 10 is huge, right? Feels like 14 is huge. And if it gets past 14 points, that's going to be a real problem. USC can really take BYU out of the game and actually make it really, really uncomfortable for that home team. And so they've got to avoid mistakes. They got to avoid mistakes. I actually thought, again, by the way, just speaking to this, I thought against Utah, the pick six to Francis Bernard, that was bad in that. But, you know, the Cougars were still in it. It wasn't that. The score wasn't terrible at this point. Like, it's fine. The second pick six, boy, though. Ooh. Right? It's so hard. You've got 65,000 people there, and they're supposed to be cheering for you, and they're supposed to be in your corner, and they don't believe you can do it. Yeah. Yeah. That would be real tough. That would be really tough to deal with. So imagine that. Hostility is favorable to apathy. And you know what? I think that's right. I think that's right. And I don't know how you get rid of apathetic feelings in a crowd, in an entire fan base. It's really hard. I mean, I've documented those well on this show. I won't go into it much. I'll just say, again, the lack of stakes, the lack of trying to understand what's going on and what we're trying to accomplish here with BYU football, outside of the idea that it's just for fun. It's just to be entertaining. It's just to try to win some football games. If we could find a way to program us to not care about national ranking, not care about the prestige of the bowl, but just to show up and have an excellent time watching that individual game, we'll be a lot happier, of course, of course. But the structure of the sport makes it really, really hard for BYU. Being independent makes it really, really hard to cheer for BYU. And, you know, the disadvantages this sport just gives in general. So we'll leave all that aside. But it is really, really interesting. And so I don't know. It would be awesome. You know, it's hard though, right? I mean, because you don't want your players to deal with that sort of, like, because it is kind of this toxic negativity within the fan base, in the sense that it's really easy to give up. It's really easy to give up, and it's really easy to believe that they're not going to come through, right? Yeah. And so it's an interesting thing to kind of think about. So his idea is not playing music and letting them play in silence. I mean, during practices and things like that, that's kind of an interesting deal, right? You know, how do you simulate tepid? That's another Cougar, and then a tepid first down. Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know that you necessarily want your guys to live in that, but boy, it is actually an interesting thing. The mental preparation that goes into handling the environment on the road, they make a lot of adjustments for that. And yeah, no, I don't know how you make, I don't know how you make the adjustments for kind of the bizarre nature of what it is to be a BYU football fan, right? By the way, I want to emphasize this one more time. I think fans are right to feel the way they feel. I don't think that you could criticize, like, you know, I think going out and pointing fingers at fans, Kalani Sitake, to his great credit, has always been 100% No, we have great fans, right? And if they boo, it's our job to make them cheer. Like, he's always had the perfect answer to that anytime it ever comes up. Okay? Always. I think he understands. I think he understands. Fans' job is to pay their money, come to the stadium, and it's not even their job to pay their money, right? I mean, you've got to give them something that makes them want to pay their money. So it's a really, really, really interesting thing about how do you overcome this problem. And again, I think it takes us back to Utah. I think you got to be Utah, ultimately. I think it's a beating Utah thing. I really do. So pretty awesome. Thank you for that. Let me try to keep this short since it's a bonus pod. On the topic of wild finishes. So I had mentioned I couldn't remember that many games during the Bronco Mendenhall era that were decided on the very last play. So Mendenhall was the coach at BYU from 2005, the head coach at BYU, from 2005 until 2015. So through the 2015 season, Kalani Sitake took over in 2016. So during that time period, Bronco Mendenhall, and what the category is, games decided literally on the very last play, meaning, there were lots of games where there's a score with a minute left or with 40 seconds left. Those are exciting and those are heartrending and all this stuff. I'm literally talking about last play, walk off the field. Okay. I'm literally talking about walk off plays. Okay. So here we are. Kalani's up to six. He's won six games and lost two games in walk-off fashion. He's 6-2 on games decided on the very last play. Six of his 21 wins have come that way. Two of his 20 losses have come on the very last play of the game. So eight of his 41 games. Wow. Okay. Mendenhall. Here we go. He had five wins and seven losses on the very last play of the game. So he had about, he had 12. He had 12 games, so a little more than one a year. For fun, some of these will be fun. Some of them won't be fun. Let's do not fun quickly, and then end with fun, and then we'll get out of here. All right? And hopefully you've enjoyed this bonus pod. And I'm not publishing this on Vanquish the Foe. This is only for you subscribers. Okay, here we go. The losses. So in 2005, they lost a crazy game, 51-50 against TCU. That broke my heart. That was a homecoming game, and I was a terrible homecoming date after that. But they lost. Jeff Ballard came in as the backup quarterback for the Texas Christian, and they had a great, great player named Corey Rogers. Corey Rogers scored a touchdown in overtime to win that game. But I think it was a fumble, but, you know, it was one of those like, well, but the nose of the football crossed the plane before, like just barely before they became fumble. And also it was on the mountain. Yeah, it's a dubious one, but okay. So they ended up losing. In 2005, they lost to Utah in overtime. Michael Reed dropped a touchdown pass that came to him on fourth down in overtime. It was kind of the last gasp. Utah had scored a touchdown on their possession, and BYU needed to go out and score. They did four consecutive plays, did not get a first down, and John Beck heaved it into the end zone. Michael Reed tried to go grab it. He dropped the ball. It's a hard catch, but he did drop it, and that's how that one was decided. In 2006, Nick Folk, 48-yard field goal at the buzzer to beat the Cougars. Yep. 2006 as well, they lost to Boston College in overtime. Matt Ryan had a touchdown pass for the Boston College, who I'm blanking on their mascot right now. I want to say Eagles, but I know that's not right. Gold, I don't know. There's a, it's a bird of some sort. You're screaming at your whatever, your phones. Okay, so Boston College. So that one. And the guy that caught it was Tony Gonzalez. Not that Tony Gonzalez, just another guy named Tony Gonzalez. Okay, 2010. So it's been 4 years now, jumping forward, 4 years further. This is the start of the losing streak to the University of Utah. This was the block by Brandon Burton. Mitch Payne, 42-yarder at the buzzers, blocked. Okay, so that's losing to Utah. The 2012 game to Utah. You will, of course, remember this game as the two kicks and a couple rushing of the fields game. Obviously, the kick and the block, the recovery by Falslev, and then the 15-yard penalty because Utah fans rushed the field, and then Stevenson kicked the next field goal and doinked it off the post. And then the last one was 2014, Memphis. They lost in overtime. This was the Christian Stewart interception, followed by the brutal brawl, the Donnybrook, the Kai Nakua game. That's probably not, I mean, we don't want to call that the Kai Nakua game, but it probably was. The other Kai Nakua, just for fun, the other Kai Nakua game would be, what, 2016 against Boise at home. He obviously had the pick six to seal it. I think he had three interceptions in that game. So, yeah, Kai Nakua was pretty darn good as a safety. Okay, here's the good memories, all right? So Bronco had 5 wins at the buzzer, 5 wins that were walk-off moments. Okay, you ready? So the first one came in 2006. 2006, crazy year. Crazy year. They had 3 games decided on the very last play. Nuts. Obviously, the answered prayer, which I referenced in that. The answered prayer, back to Harleen. Obviously, iconic BYU football moment. 2007. 2007 saw a win at the buzzer against UCLA. Kai Forbath's field goal was blocked by Ethan Manumaliuna. And the Cougars won the Las Vegas Bowl to close out the 2007 season. Again, another iconic play that's kind of been lost a little bit, of it that's certainly memorable. How about the 2008 game against Washington, at Washington? This is the Jake Locker celebration game. Ah, yes, you remember this. Obviously, he threw the football up into the air after running it in the end zone. They needed the PAT to tie the game, but they, because of the penalties, it became a very long PAT. BYU blocked that PAT and escaped. And that is a good thing because Washington went winless that year. So, crazy. 2009, obviously the Andrew George game. Andrew George beats Utah in overtime. Of course, you remember that. And, of course, another iconic moment, 2015, against Nebraska, the Mangum Miracle. Mangum Miracle. So, there you go. So, some really fun memories. And you can see, like, you know, I remember, it's funny how this works. You remember all the big wins and how they happened and at that last moment and kind of how iconic they were with Bronco. It is interesting. You look at the Kalani ones, and I can remember them because I'm a freak, but I think a lot of people, there aren't like really short ways to refer to these games. The Arizona game, neutral site, obviously the Jake the Make game. I guess that's what we'll call that one, the Jake the Make. The birth of Jake the Make. That was in 2016. Obviously, you look at the Toledo game, which was the Rhett You Bet game. Rhett Allman, obviously, at Mississippi State. You've got the Wisconsin game, which was the Gaglianoni, Rafael Gaglianoni missing his field goal at the buzzer to ensure that BYU won. Obviously, and then you have the Tennessee game. Look, obviously Mississippi State was the game that went overtime, where Taysom Hill ran it in, but there isn't like that, you know, they're field goals and these kind of like iconic moments. The Tennessee one, we don't have a nickname for, and it's not really one that, like, because it's like, it's kind of one where you have to remember like three things that happened. You know, the Miracle Bowl is punctuated by the Clay Brown catch in the end zone. But, you know, you have to remember there was an onside kick. Vaisa Kahema had a punt return for a touchdown. Like, there is a lot of things that happen in order to make that game happen. And have it come together. The Tennessee game was kind of that way, wasn't it? It was a combination of the Micah Simon 64-yard play, the Jake Oldroyd hits it over the goalpost game. I don't know. I don't know what we make of that. And then obviously the Tyson Williams drags a bunch of people in the end zone game. Like, I don't know what you call that one. So, you know, there's too many, I guess, little, it took too many crazy plays, too many, you know, shocks of luck in order for that one to come together. So it feels wrong to, like, name it like the Tyson Williams game, because it wasn't really like the Tyson Williams game. And it's not really the Micah Simon. Like, maybe that's the Micah Simon game. Maybe. Right? If we have the birth of Jake the Make, maybe the Tennessee is the crowning, the knighthood, the coronation of Jake the Make. I don't know. But anyway, it's kind of fun to take a look at that. But so to sum up, Bronco Mendenhall had five wins in his time, where it came down to the very last play, very last. And Kalani Sitake has six. He has six games in that scenario. So, kind of interesting. Kind of interesting. Five of Bronco Mendenhall's 99 wins at BYU came on the very last play of the game. Six of Kalani's 21 wins have come on the very last play of the game. So, whew, as always, and by the way, going through and looking at all the play-by-play of these close games and stuff, it's like, you know what? Like, yeah, winning football games is hard. The great Dave Rose, right? Winning games is hard. And I think it's right. I just think, you know, going out and winning a tough game is tough. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens when the Cougars take on USC. And honestly, it's a great point, Bo, on that first email. Can't possibly allow USC to take the crowd out of the game. Crowd has to be a factor, especially when you think that one of the big things that could hurt USC is having Keaton Slovis struggle in his first road test as a college football player. So they're going to be the biggest crowd he's ever played in front of, with the most rabid craziness going on around him. But the bad news is that if they go out and take care of business or have a couple big plays that happen, or if we give away points or we have bad turnovers or things like this, it's possible to take that BYU crowd away. And that's just the nature of these things. Okay, that's it for this week's CougarCast podcast. Really appreciate all the content, the emails, the good thoughts, the the tweets. There's a funny one that I got where it just said, basically, I've been listening to CougarCast for a while, and the climax of each one is, can BYU do X? And the answer is no. Sorry, guys. I don't know. I don't want to pull the punch. I think it's been a bit. It's been a bit since we've had a team that you felt really confident in. And I think that kind of drives the point home of that email and why the crowd is the way it is. So it's going to be huge. Players can do everything they can to take the crowd and make them an asset. But if they allow BYU to get behind the eight ball, going to be real tough. Bonus pod over. Take care of yourselves. Be kind to one another. We'll talk to you real soon.